And welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It is episode number 421. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today, it's the OG crew. We've got Emily Soden.
What's up?
And we've got Glenn Fox.
What's up?
And we're broadcasting from I'm from a very cold office. Em, you've been like kicked out of your office because nothing electrical in your house is working, right?
Yeah, something like that. It's not a good day.
No, it's all going wrong. So if Em sounds a bit weird or like a robot or something else, then that's why. But I'm sure it'll be fine. Glenn, how's your electrical wiring holding up?
Good today, actually. It was bloody freezing yesterday, but today I'm quite warm.
Oh. What's that got to do with your electrical wiring? Are you electric heated? That's expensive, yeah. You know.
I don't know what I am, actually.
That's the dullest thing in the entire world. But when you go around looking to, like, get a mortgage or something, you suddenly start caring about things like, well, has it got gas heating or electric heating? Because if one joule of gas energy is equivalent to 4 joules of electric energy, and you become the dullest person in the world. It's really awful.
Sounds fun.
No, never do it. It's really horrible. So, more fun stuff than property nonsense is gaming. We've got lots of it, because what have we got this week? Announcements about Shin Megami Tensei 5 coming over to Switch in the West. Pokemon Go is causing traffic accidents. More on that. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is coming officially to mobile twice. Go figure. Plus, we've got new releases, including the likes of console-quality racer Grid Autosport landing on mobile, Gear Unlimited, which is a mobile-quality racer landing on Switch. It's confusing, but happening nonetheless. Neverending Nightmares is grim, it's black and white, it's bloody, it's quite good. Plus, the likes of Hoppenheim and Game Dev Tycoon. We also have a word with the creator of RP Golf, a new indie game which has been featured on the App Store recently, and talk about why he decided to combine an RPG with a golf sim. I talked to him, I've done the interview, I'm still not entirely sure why. But first, it's the news. So Shin Megami Tensei 5, this is kind of the core bit of what became the Persona series, which is the bit we're most familiar with, I think, in the West. Persona 5 being the most recent one to come out. I still haven't finished Persona 4. I'm a bad man. But Shin Megami Tensei 5 is now officially coming to the West, which is nice. I don't know if people decrypted this from a Japanese language trailer. I think we got an actual official English language one, which made people quite happy.
It was definitely official.
Okay, good. I don't think I've played any of the actual core ones. I've just played the Persona stuff. But people are excited. It's one of those things where people in the know who like those Atlus games, which is the developer behind a lot of these sort of anime-styled RPGs that come over, they were very, very excited. So if you're a Switch owner, you like that cool stuff, we will be keeping you informed all the way into 2018, when it probably arrives. Quick one on Pokemon Go before we get to the main story, really. There's been a university study which looked into police reports of traffic accidents. And what they've determined, I'll walk you through it, is that Pokemon Go caused loads of car crashes when it was launched. We've all witnessed a bit of Pokemania, I think. We've all been wandering down the road and seen people gathered around like a signpost or something, which you later discover it was like a gym or something like that. So I've seen evidence. I've never seen anyone claiming it, like, caused a car wreck.
Well, didn't we talk about this when it first got announced? We were saying there's going to be so many deaths related to Pokemon Go, and it turned out to be true.
I haven't seen reported deaths yet. I know
people
that they
are
were
going to do crazy stuff, like go to some really dangerous location just to catch a Pokemon and all that. Like, people are stupid.
Yeah, no, I think in that study, two people had actually died.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Damn.
I remember, do you guys remember when it first came out last year, there was that woman, I think in the UK, that was literally like playing Pokemon Go in her car, like going on the motorway or something. And she caused like a 5-car pileup. And like, I think she killed either herself or someone else.
Just mad, isn't it?
I wasn't aware of the fatalities. Good God.
Oh yeah, there's been, I'm pretty sure I've heard of fatalities since it first launched. Just like crazy stuff happening.
Wow. Well, for legal reasons, I haven't seen any of these, and we should probably stipulate that we're not directly saying the game is killing people necessarily.
Oh, no, I'm saying people are killing people because they're stupid.
Okay.
I'm saying people are stupid.
Yeah, the game is fine. But it's like, do we have to get to the point as a civilization, but like when it comes to games and think ahead and go, this is a dangerous people because, you know, we can't rely on people doing it safely. Like, do we have to think about that if we're going to start doing GPS games?
Well, they still do that thing in GTA, don't they, at the beginning, where they're like, by the way, don't drive like this in real life or something, because you will die. They put like a warning that, by the way, this is a video game and spoilers, if you smash your car and cause a 12-car pileup, you're not going to just fly out of the windscreen and get up afterwards, like Nico Bellic. Mm-hmm. But with this report specifically, this is a university study they did about a period last year, quoting your report, ERM, where traffic accidents were heightened. This is Marca Faccio, I'm going to say, and John J. McConnell of Purdue University. The accident report says as much as between £5 and £25 million worth of damage has been racked up in this period of 148 days, as well as the two avoidable deaths that you talked about. And that apparently nationwide damage could be estimated as much as $7.3 billion. Now, the reason this is significant is because the figures were summarised noting the increase in crashes that occurred around Pokestops and gyms after July the 6th. So it literally was that thing that we saw with people, only instead of people being crowded around a lamppost, just a pile of semis. People like lolling out of them with their iPhones in their hands, just like, I just want to catch the pidgey. As their dying word.
No one wants to catch the pidgey, James.
I know, but, you know, you've got to get something out of it if you've actually given your life. So what we're really saying here is that in the future, potentially next year, around November time, Harry Potter could be responsible for the deaths of millions.
Yes, that's what we're saying. You heard it here first.
That's the takeaway from this. So, question is, let's see if Niantic does put a little warning at the beginning saying, by the way, you're not a wizard. Don't jump off of a building expecting to fly on your broomstick. Because it's just a phone.
A game.
Right. The game name that I hate saying, but I am going to be saying now for the next 2 years, clearly. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. We had a game last week, Rules of Survival, that came out that's got some attention and people have been playing it and got lots of views. It seems that, if anything, it's riffing on the themes and gameplay mechanics of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. It's going to do quite well. We've seen other ones pop up this week. You spotted one, Em, like a Chinese game or release in the Chinese App Store that was very similar.
Yeah, it was like called something Mission or something. It was actually released by Tencent.
Oh, really? It was released by Tencent?
Yeah.
Oh, well, which is interesting.
Yeah, I was so confused about it.
Because Tencent has announced that it is the one that is bringing official PlayerUnknown's Battleground games to mobile. And yes, I did say games, because there's going to be two. One of which, I think, deals with the island-based stuff. And the other one, from what you said here, or John Monday has said rather, introduces naval combat into the game?
Yeah, it's like, you know, you kind of branch off and it's got some navy ships and like it's still on land and things, but you've got boats and all this sort of stuff.
Okay.
From the trailer. I mean, I don't speak the language that the trailer's in, but I assume.
Yeah, Unknown Royal Battle is the name. And that's, yeah, that is interesting. Maybe they made Unknown Royal Battle, Tencent, I mean, the developer, and the PlayerUnknown guys looked at it and went, that's actually quite a good copy. Could you make the official one?
Maybe. I'm going to be interested to see if that, because I said this to Clement when I was talking to him the other day. I wonder if that Royal Mission or Mission something or other by Tencent will actually turn into PUBG.
Oh, really? You think it's like a kind of pre-release alpha version and they're going to switch names?
Yeah, like a ruse, because it's like it's pretty much identical. It's like, you know, 100-player lobby. You go in via plane. You try and kill each other until, you know, one person's left standing and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that is that's possible. It's become the sort of craze now. So you've got a whole bunch of games. There's one called Guns Royale, which is like a Minecrafty version. There's Rules of Survival from last week. There's Bullet Strike Battlegrounds, and they all are just straight up lifts of PlayerUnknown. So it's all PUBG, I should just call it, because it's easier. And these battle royales appear to be the next thing, because for a while there it was the hero shooters, wasn't it? It was the Overwatch style things and your top-down hero Dota style Clash Royale three lane doodads. They became, that's a good summary of the genre, they became the hot thing, and everyone was trying to make knockoffs of those. And now it seems to be, since the most weirdly named game in the world has proved to be just insanely successful. But I guess, first thing, we should get used to seeing lots of different versions of it. Second thing, we're going to be covering this quite a lot. We have on-site experts whom I will be talking to and just looking at them puzzled and going, okay, when they ask me stuff about it. Because, yeah, it's going to take over. It's everywhere. But we do go back to the thing we were sort of discussing last week with Dave and saying that I found Rules of Survival a bit wobbly and a bit dodgy and maybe mobile's not the greatest platform for it. And Tencent are going to have to come out here and really prove us wrong. We've, in fact, did a little article, which you contributed to, didn't you, Glenn?
Yep.
About why we think this game may be a good fit in some cases, maybe not so much in others.
Hmm.
And it sounds like you echoed similar stuff to me last week about like the interfaces and whatnot.
Yeah, I think sort of is it a good fit for mobile is probably the wrong question from my perspective. I think it's more like, is it good enough? Because I think that's something that the Switch has stressed this year, that we don't really need games to be perfect for people to lap them up and love them, you know. And we've seen that, to be fair, a lot on mobile. There have been games that people have downloaded and played for months that we've been like, why are you doing that? But like GTA, for example, all the GTAs on mobile don't really work, but they're quite popular and people play them. So I think it's just a case of it being good enough. So if someone can come in and make a version that just works, I just think that the mistake a developer will make will be literally just going, let's just put PlayerUnknown on mobile and put all the buttons on the screen and hope it works. Like they're going to have to go a little bit deeper than that and think about how it's going to work on the platform. Like, for example, I think maybe doing an isometric version would be better.
You have to optimize correctly. And that's always the problem when people just come in and they dump stuff on the platform and go, this will just work. We'll just, everything that you have a keyboard for, a keyboard command, a mouse click, or a face button on a joypad, we'll just put those buttons all over the screen till you can't see the game anymore underneath it.
Yep.
And that's not the greatest way to play a game. But hopefully they can tidy it all up and sort it all out. And I imagine they've got the bankroll now to try and really invest in optimizing this thing and spend the time doing it. Because, good Lord, I'm sure that game is making plenty. So, keep your eyes on Pocket Gamer for more info. And check out the AtSpy review of Rules of Survival if you want to see the games running and see what one of these things looks like when it's on mobile. Read the discussion that Glenn put out and also a list of games which are very similar to it if you are up for this kind of thing and you can't wait till next year. It's difficult enough to get a big AAA project off of the ground when you've got financiers willing to throw money at whatever your massive IP might be. But if you're trying to make an independent game while still affording the little niceties like food and shelter, then it can be a little trickier. RP Golf is a game that smushes together two somewhat disparate genres, the RPG format and the golf sim, into one game, and is the pet project of Ricardo, a developer who's out there in Japan at the minute and is joining us on the podcast today. Hello, Ricardo.
Hello, James.
You've chosen two quite different genres there. You've got an RPG, and we're talking classic 16-bit style top-down RPG in the cast of, you know, Zelda or Link to the Past.
Yes.
Mixed with a golf sim.
Yes.
Why did you try and make this genre mashup?
So, well, it all started like back when I was playing on the Game Boy, you know, the old black and white Game Boy.
Yeah.
And I was given like one of the first game I received for that was like, well, except for Tetris, that was in the package, of course.
Yes,
I got the old game Golf, just called Golf, but actually was Mario Golf probably. And what I hated about that game is that I really wanted to see what was around. I didn't like that I had to be teleported every time to the ball location. I made a shot and I was like teleported there. I made a shot and I was teleported there. So I always wanted to have a chance to explore that area. That came the part of the open world golf game. Then it was like, I don't know, I wanted more action. I was like, what if there were monsters on the field?
So, okay.
From there, it went a little bit like downhill. I was like, okay, let's hit them with a club. Yeah, and it would be cool to have magic too. And yeah, okay, so I'm going to, well, a golf RPG. Yeah, that's how I came with RP Golf.
And you guys, you put it up as an Indiegogo project, which was obviously successfully backed. That was back in 2016, wasn't it? So you've been working on this for the best part of an entire year?
Actually, it's a little bit longer than that. If you check on Twitter, the game was showed, the first time was shown on like the Tokyo Indie Fest of 2015.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, 2015, yeah. Then that's like, that we had like a very bootstrap version that we showed around. We were looking for, you know, financing. The response was pretty good, and that's the first time where I met the actual publisher, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Came back in 2016 with the campaign of Indiegogo, which was good, and that one at least could pay for the, you know, assets, artworks, because the team is like me and my colleague Marco. Hi, Marco. And basically, like, we are two developers, and he also takes care of the music of the game. And
right,
I also brought the story and, you know, the gameplay system. But we are no artists, so we had to pay for the artworks. That was the biggest thing to pay. And that's right. where Indiegogo came in.
Well, it's out there in the wild now. It's been out for a couple of weeks. It's on iOS only, maybe bringing it to Android in the future, am I right?
Yes. Actually, the Android version is going to come in a week. So,
a week. Okay, fantastic.
The 7th of December, we're going to have like the Android version. And probably around the same time, there's going to be an update for iOS too. So
right,
we're going to make a small update for that. And also, it's out on Apple TV too.
I've been playing it today. And it isn't like an unusual thing when you first grab it. So the idea being that you're wandering around from hole to hole, dealing with creatures that you encounter in between. And it does make sense in a way, because when you are playing Golf Sims, you're right. It's very often a case of you just got the guy, you take the shot, and then the screen fades to black, you know, and then you just appear at wherever your ball landed. Whereas the actual sport of golf, and I'm not a golfer, but I know people who play, and they say a big part of the process of playing golf is the journey, is walking in between the holes, and it's like, you know, enjoying the scenery and stuff, and that's actually an integral part of the game that's often lost when you're playing a straight-up golf sim. So this does let you wander from, like, hole to hole or shot to shot. Thing is, having played it a bunch today, you've kind of isolated the different points. So if you're going to take say it's a par 3 or something, you take your first shot and the green is on a little island. So you then need to wander around and find a way to get onto that island, which might involve going through like an underground cavern filled with giant spider beasties or something like that. And you come pre-armed because you've got your golf club, so you can batter folks with that. But you also get things like you get a magic fire glove, which can, you know, destroy creatures and melt ice and whatnot. And it feels slightly more organic than I expected.
Well, that's the point I was trying to get, and I'm glad you liked it, really.
What was the trickiest thing to get right? Because what you could wind up doing here is just basically make an RPG with a bit of golf in, or a golfing game with a tiny bit of RPG aspect. Like, what was the trickiest thing to balance between those two genres?
Well, the trickiest part of the balancing was like how to merge those two genres in the best way. The first version that I showed was actually a turn-based one. It wasn't a real-time fight like Zelda. It was more like a Final Fantasy style.
Right,
but then I realized
that
was breaking the action too much. So having the game stop for a second, having the battle and go on, that was not really the original idea I had in mind. So that's why I decided to go for an action RPG.
Okay.
The second part was like, your weapon of choice is a golf club, as you said. And of course, when you power up your golf club, you get like better shots in golf, but you also get like more power during the RPG part, and you can also get like special powers, but I don't want to spoil the game too much.
And when you are attacked by enemies, if you, for example, take damage and you lose hit points, that affects your golf swing, doesn't it? You lose power from your golf shot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, imagine being on a golf club and you have a monster attacking you. You're like, you're wounded, you're losing blood, and you're not feeling 100%. Would you be able to shot to make a very nice shot?
See, if this is how golf actually works, I would totally watch it.
That would be a lot more interesting, right?
If Tiger Woods, like back in the day, was like dragging his damaged leg behind him and fending off some kind of giant dragon, then that would be a sport I would watch.
Right. It would be kind of dangerous, but hey.
So I noticed from playing it, I'm about like 3 holes in at my point in the game at my save file. There are 9 holes in total. I noticed something on the Indiegogo with a like little bracket saying 18 as an idea for maybe like if you got enough money or development cost. Are you planning to expand the game in future, or is this the finished article now?
Well, first of all, this is not the finished version. And in the new update, you will also receive some of that. I mean, we tweaked the battle system a little bit, for example, and we made it a lot more interesting. But let me just tell you one thing. There aren't 9 holes in the game.
Oh, okay. Right, so I'm only on page 1 of the map then, maybe.
Yeah, that's like, of course, it's 9 holes, but then you get 9 more. Well, I can say that.
Oh.
It's like, It's also said by an NPC in the game, so I'm not spoiling too much.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and there are actual characters that you run into which give you little tips. And I say it is quite 16-bit RPG. Now, with regards to the releasing of the game, so you've now thrown it out there. It's on the App Store. It's a premium game, which is a bold move nowadays, given everything's gone free-to-play. Yeah. And it's been out for a couple of weeks. What's the feedback been? How difficult is it to get your game noticed on an App Store that is as crowded as Apple's App Store?
Well, actually, we were featured on the App Store after the release. Actually, we were featured in, basically, 140-something App Store. It was actually pretty good response, of course, for being, like, as you say, a premium game on such a crowded market. And being no one, because, of course, nobody has heard of Arctic ever before. So I can totally understand that. But actually, the response was pretty good. It went beyond my expectation, and we are pretty happy.
Did the Indiegogo mean you could focus full-time on it, or were you still doing other things to stay afloat whilst developing this?
Well, the second one, for sure. I mean, both me and the other person that worked on the project, we still do the same thing. So we do, like, IT development, so that's what we do.
Right.
We had to do a couple of other projects to keep ourselves alive and fed. But at least we could pay the artworks, which was the best part. In the last month, before the launch, we were basically focused full time on the game, and because it was about time to release it. So,
have you already thought about, like, whether you want to do this kind of thing again? It's been a long journey to get to this point. Has it been a positive one? Do you think it's paying off or beginning to pay off? Or because there's a lot of people who will do this, try it once, it doesn't work, and then they get burnt out and, you know, just give up on the whole thing. And there are people who plug away at it for years and years and years without really seeing the rewards that they were looking for. So people approach it in drastically different ways. How's it been for you? And has it given you the fire to want to do more of this kind of thing?
No, definitely. I mean, we will definitely do more games, for sure.
Uh-huh.
It was, like, very gratifying in many ways, for sure. Not only, like, from a sales point of view. It was also, like, when you see finally somebody that likes your game and tells you, oh, I love this thing you did. Hey, it's the best thing ever, to be honest. That really feels great. And after this title, I learned a lot of stuff, too. Definitely the next title will go a lot more smoothly than this one.
What would you go back and tell you from, like, 2 years ago, this is what you should do?
Well, the first thing is, like, be realistic. Don't add too many features from the beginning. Try to make a game that is good as it is. Then, if you have more time, more resources, and of course more money, that's for sure, do more. And most importantly, try to give yourself a tight schedule and try to stay close to that as much as possible, because the game is never ready otherwise.
Okay, well, best of luck with the game launching on Android. You can find RP Golf on iOS at the minute, and then the Google Play Store in a week's time. And best of luck with whatever you pursue next. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Out and about this week, we're going to start off with a game that's caused me some frustration so far this week. Not because I don't like playing it, but because I can't play it because I don't have a device capable of running it properly and recording footage, which is Grid Autosport. So this is the kind of premiere racer, which has done its very best, from what I can see, to go, this is the full console, glorious racing experience, totally premium, not free to play, £10 price tag, and it's going to be running on your mobile phone. Or it isn't, unless you have an iPhone 7 or upwards, or an iPad from 2016 or later. Everyone else can do one. You've played it a bit, Glenn.
Yeah, it says it. Well, when I downloaded it, it was like, this is not going to work on your device. Is that okay? And I was like, okay, fine. But it works fine. I haven't downloaded the HD textures or any of the extra content. I'm just playing the base vanilla version. But it runs fine.
I see, I couldn't even do that. I went to download and it was like, the App Store just, like, went, lol, no.
Yeah.
The message actually popped up and just like, no, you can't, don't even try. You can't download this. We're not letting you embarrass yourself by downloading this.
It's a shame we're getting to that point, but it's probably good for the industry generally that we're seeing games like this come to the platform. But it's a shame that people who just bought a really expensive iPhone like 2 years ago are kind of getting locked out of stuff.
It's a bit harsh. But I guess what they're shooting for here is forget all those mobile races, forget your gear unlimited gear club stuff and all that and your real racing. This is real racing. Is it real racing, Glenn?
Man, I think I'm the worst person to possibly comment on this because I don't like that type of racing. It just literally looks like a line of cars politely driving around a track and braking at every corner, and it's not very fun to watch. So I was playing it thinking, how do I overtake people? Am I allowed to smash people off the road? Like, I'm not the target demographic at all.
So you mean when you say you don't like this kind of racing, you mean you don't like racing? What you want is Carmageddon.
I like the racing in Fast and Furious, yeah.
That's not that's racing.
I want Mario Kart. I want Burnout. But, I mean, the game itself runs nicely and it looks great. I didn't really get on with the steering because it wants you to do motion controls and I hate motion controls, so I turned that off as quickly as possible. It looks great. I didn't even have the HD textures and I was quite impressed. So
it still looks quite good.
Yeah.
To give you a more positive outlook, Harry reviewed it, and he does like these kind of games, and he's got a device capable of handling it properly, and gave it a gold. He really, really liked it, said it was effectively like a stunning racing game, to quote, feels like it was always designed to be meant, always designed to end up on mobile, which is a nice touch, because obviously this is a version of a console franchise. Motion controls are great, he says. It lets you customize things massively. But he also said that you shouldn't let any kind of difficulty put you off. There is a genuine thrill to the racing, and you should go and grab it. It's expensive. It's £9.99, so, you know, be warned. And check out the review we've got and the trailer and the video stuff that's available on PG. In a similar vein, the reverse of that, really, Gear Club, which is a mobile game, a free-to-play mobile game, got released on Switch this week as a premium game that costs £40. Why? What?
Just one massive facepalm. The awful thing is, well, I tried looking for differences between the mobile game and the Switch game, and I just can't see any apart from, you know, that they've removed the IAPs in the Switch version.
Right.
And now made it like, you know, they still have the reward system where you collect bits from tasks you do and you get money for it, but it just looks really janky.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I think it's just the whole Switch platform for mobile stuff. Like, the whole thing works like a mobile game and it looks like a mobile game, but it's £45 where you could get it for free on iOS, and I have a problem with that.
Yeah, we've encountered this in the past when games have decided to switch payment model halfway through production or something like that. So this is a free-to-play game that has had bits shaved off of it and payments removed. So converting that effectively into a premium console experience you could sit down and play for hours is probably quite hard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the good thing is that I had my boyfriend on hand because he's an engineer anyway, so he loves, you know, dealing with the cars and things like that.
Right.
So I gave him a go and I watched him play it for about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really enjoying it at first because you get to build up your car, your engine, and, you know, choose what bits and bobs goes in it and what kind of, you know, exterior you'd like in your workshop and things.
Gotcha.
But then he got to a point and he was like, right, I'm bored now. Because each of the races only lasts about a minute.
Oh, yeah, and yes.
For mobile, yeah, sure, that's totally fine because, you know, you're on a bus or a plane or, you know, you're traveling home or just want a quickie before dinner. But for a Switch game, surely, you know, you feel you want a little bit more from it. You think about Mario Kart and that sort of stuff. You know, it's really fun doing the racing, but it feels like you don't get a chance to. I said to Matt, like, I, you know, parked in front of the TV and, like, docked the thingy and was like, okay, let's play multiplayer together. And it started up and I was like, what is this? Because, like, the graphics were... I thought they kind of did what Rocket League did, you know, sort of sacrificed the graphics for performance and whatnot. Yeah. And the graphics look really boxy. And the introduction menus and loading screens and things were completely silent.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, so we were kind of a bit unnerved by that. It was like, I feel like this is like an awkward silence.
I feel like the game's broken.
Yeah, well, and then when we were playing, half of the screen sound would go, like, on my side, and Matt's would still be totally fine. And then it would come back, and both the cars would be going, and then it would just cut off again. I was like, why do you hate me?
Right. In that case, were you giving it a sort of a 6, saying it that, you know, elements of the racing are good, but the whole package clearly doesn't feel like it's suited for Switch as well? Certainly not playing docked anyway. But you can get it. It's full price. But maybe play the mobile version first and see if you like it. And then maybe just keep playing the mobile version if you like it. Because it's a lot cheaper. Maybe, perhaps.
Yep. That. I second that.
Okay, good. Other stuff out this week, very quickly. Neverending Nightmares, which is a psychological horror game that appeared on PC. I think it's on console as well. And as a very unique art style, it's just appeared on mobile. And we really quite liked it. Again, Harry reviewed it very strongly. I've done a video review over on AppSpy. I like it. I'm hardwired to enjoy this kind of thing. But it's a sort of side-scrolling point-and-click adventure scenario where you play the role of a boy who wakes up in bed after having a nightmare. And he's in an old house and he gets to go and explore. And that's pretty much it. But the game almost has echoes of PT, I thought, where it ties you into a loop. So you get out of bed and you go into the bathroom, there's nothing there. You go into the hallway and you wander down and, it's a bit spooky and there's old pictures and it's a bit grim. And everything's monochrome. It's all drawn like a very lo-fi comic book, so like a sketch done in charcoal or something, or ink line drawing. And the only things that have any colour are objects you can interact with. So it makes it very clear what you're supposed to be doing. So door handles are gold, for example, so you just tap on them and you'll open. And then you see an object and you'll find a candle at one point that's red. You can pick it up and it lights the darker areas. And all the while there's all this kind of, creaky horror stuff going on in the background. And then you'll encounter something bad, something weird and scary and awful. And I won't spoil it. And then suddenly, bam, you wake up and you're back in bed again, waking up from what you've presumably experienced, which is a nightmare. Then you get up and move around and it's the same house, but everything's slightly different. Things will have changed, rooms will have moved. And this keeps recurring. So similar to PT, when you go back through the door again and you open it up and the corridors change slightly, the lighting's off or something like that. This is more narrative-based. This is a story of a boy and his family and his sister. So there is a plot that gets revealed gradually as you go through. And it's really interesting and atmospheric, and I've played about an hour of it, and I really liked it. It's good use of atmosphere and whatnot. It is repetitive in the same way that Groundhog Day is repetitive as a movie, but it's repetitive for narrative reasons, if you see what I mean. And it's a game which is about I think the developer suffered from some issues with this kind of thing, experiencing recurring trauma and nightmares and stuff, and it's very much based on their experience. So it is supposed to unnerve you and feel frustrating and feel at times. But then it's horror, so you'd sort of hope that would happen. But you can get that right now. That costs money. I don't know exactly, about between £3 and £5, I think. That's available on iPhone only at the minute. Oh, actually, I think it is on Google Play. I may be lying there. Hoppenhelm. Have you had a go at this, anybody?
No.
It looks cool. I mean, it sounds cool. I like the name.
Yeah, well, that's good enough. You downloaded. It's the most Nitrome game that Nitrome hasn't made. Yeah. It's well Nitrome, and I mean that as a compliment, as in it's a really good use of a one-touch game. So, side-scrolling, imagine a side-scrolling hack-and-slash game where you can only jump. So, you use one button at the bottom where you jump, and you jump from block to block to block. So, each bit of the ground is a tile, effectively. So, you tap, and you'll jump onto that tile. If there's enemy on a tile next to it, there's also a attack button, so you slash at the enemy. Some blocks will disintegrate if you stand them for too long, so you have to keep jumping. And the whole thing has a ticking clock mechanism, which is like boiling lava beneath the platform, and it's rising, so you better not stay still for too long or it's gonna get you. And you just have to keep hopping forward, and so it's like tap 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 slash, and it's getting it in the right order and doing it quickly. Nice big chunky pixel art graphics, 3 lives and you're out, very quick to pick up, put it down, start again, and quite satisfying with it. So it's a really arcadey, good fun little thing. We really liked it, 8 out of 10, and I was playing it for a chunk of this morning and very much enjoying myself. Maybe take a look at that. Hoppenhelm is the name of the game. What else you got? Game Dev Tycoon, I had a very quick go on, which is, do you remember those Game Dev Story and Racing Car Story? There wasn't that version, but that series of games that were really, really big for a while. Those pixel art sort of resource management games. Yeah. This is like one of those in a slightly more slick and swish version, focused specifically on game dev stuff. And it is really dialing into it. You make your own games and you choose everything from what platform do you want it to come out on? What genre do you want it to be? What do you want the balance in your budget? Do you want to focus on making the game engine better? Do you want to focus on the graphics? Do you want to focus on the story? And at every point during developing the game, it pops up things like, we've reached this point. Do you want to tweak these elements? Do you want to make the controller support better or whatever? And you adjust the budget accordingly. And then the game comes out, and then you get a bunch of reviews for your game. And then it's, the first game I made was like 8, 7 out of 10s, and it was like, good. And the second game I made, right, which I thought was going to be better based on what I'd chosen, got 4 out of 10s. And for a brief moment, I was put on the other side of the journalist game dev prism and went, oh, everyone hates my game. This is shit. I don't like it. And then I wrote lots of angry emails and I trolled the comment section of the review. I didn't do that. That's a terrible thing to do. Don't do that, developers. But it's quite interesting. You start out in the 80s and the idea is you work your way through up to present day. I'm not really super into these kind of games, but I thought it was presented nicely. And I got feelings from playing it, if you know what I mean. I got like annoyed when it got badly reviewed and I was quite pleased when it was well reviewed. So I guess that's good. Otherwise, I would have felt nothing. And you can download it for £4.99 or $4.99. This is the game I can't say much about because I don't understand it. You ever have things where you pick up and you're just immediately baffled? And I usually like this kind of thing. Games which give you no instruction. Games which don't tell you what to do. And because I was slightly in a rush this morning to be like, I've got to play a few other things just to see what they're like, I just got frustrated at it. It's called Gnog. G-N-O-G. And it's a puzzle game where everything's sort of entirely visual, where this weird boombox looking thing appeared on the screen with two buttons on either side, and I could flip it around and look at the back, and it had some scribbles on it. And that was it. There are four buttons on the front. I don't know what they do. There's some scribbles on the back. I don't know what they're for. And I was just doing that, like tapping and hitting the phone like a cat in a GIF, confused by the phone, just doing, I get it. What's that? Well, just work. Do something. It's been reviewed on the site by Harry, and you gave it an 8 out of 10. And apparently it's great, but I don't know what's going on.
Harry's just smarter than us, isn't he? Like, that's two games we've just got completely wrong this week.
Well, and yours was to do with taste. Mine's to do with, I think I spent 5 minutes scrabbling at it like an idiot, not knowing what was going on.
No, this is boring.
Yeah, well, not boring, just like, I need to do a podcast now, and I need to have a feeling for what this game is, and I don't know what it is. So, we've all experienced that, I'm sure, where it's like, you're forced to play a game under duress. And if people have ever been to review events, this can be a thing that happens, where it's not the best way to review a game at all, where you're suddenly chaperoned into a room, and you're like, you've got 6 hours to play and complete the game, and then review it in a bubble. So you just sit in the dark playing the whole game. It's like, this is not a natural circumstance. This doesn't feel comfortable and a good way to review a game. But this was just, I had no time and no patience. But read Harry's review if you want to have an actually informed opinion about what it is. And I'll probably come back next week saying I've played it and it's great. Has anyone else got anything they've played or want to talk about?
Resident Evil Revelations, do we mention 1 and 2 on Switch now?
No, good point. That's pretty cool. Is that both of them out on Switch?
Yes. And also, they're very, very different games, which is kind of cool. I'll quickly run you through it in case you haven't heard of them. Resident Evil Revelations 1 is made by the director of Resident Evil 7, and he sort of revived the franchise with this game. Originally came on 3DS, and it went to basically every single other console imaginable.
Yes, and it's a third-person exploration doodad.
Yeah, it's a return to roots, basically, for the franchise. It's got Resident Evil 4's type of combat, but it's basically Resident Evil 1 in terms of how it plays. Very single location, looking for puzzles and killing monsters and stuff like that, zombies. So that's cool. But then you got Resident Evil Revelations 2, which is much more like, well, it's closer to sort of Resi 6, Resi 5, Resi 4, and it's mostly an action game. And it's designed to play in co-op, which I don't think really works for survival horror, but it did some smart stuff. Like, there are some enemies you can't see unless you shine a torch on them, and one of your characters got a torch, the other's got a gun. So you, like, work together, so there's some quite cool things there.
Unless you're the girl, Barry's girl ward, holding the bloody torch, and that's your role.
That's probably boring, yeah.
That sucks. I've got the second one set. I've got two. It's like episodic chapter-based thing that was downloaded in chunks. Yeah.
It's really odd how they did an about turn. I mean, the second one generally got reviewed better than the first, and I haven't actually played it all the way through. I've only played about half of it.
Okay.
And I was kind of confused about that, because I was just like, this is kind of just Resident Evil 6 all over again. It felt very much like 6 to me.
I've taken a few runs at Resi Revelations 2. I'm not taken with it. I didn't think it was very good.
No, me neither. I mean, it's a good action game. If you've got someone else to play it with, I think it's probably a lot better than it is solo.
Well, so those are both out to download, presumably, and purchase in store, I guess?
You can't get the physical copies in Europe, apparently. It's really weird, but just digital only over here. I guess you could import the US copies if you really want one. It's open, isn't it?
Okay, so double resis for your Switch there. That'll do. We'll leave it there. Thank you, everyone, for joining, as always. Go and check out the iTunes page, maybe leave a review. That'd be nice. And thanks to all our guests. I've looked back at some of the people we've spoken to since we've started doing interviews. It's been nice. We've had some cool people.
Yeah, definitely. It's been quite an impressive 3 months, is it, since we started doing it?
Probably longer, I'd say. 3-4 months. Yeah. I should say that, like, Glenn is the one who mostly sorts out the interviews for this, and Em does some.
You're the star,
as well.
James.
I just see the list and see who's next. I get the easy job.
But I can't talk to people. You actually go out and you talk to these people and you ask them questions. That's the scary bit.
By go out, you mean sit in my office in the dark beneath a blanket. So I do that with aplomb. So it's been great. I hope you guys like the interviews, if you guys listen to the end and enjoy the different people we talk to, because it's all just, it's been fun. Nice different voices, and everyone from super big stars to little indie devs, and a nice little snapshot of the community there. Very cool. So carry on listening. We're going to have more, and we will see you next week for just that. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Thank you.
Bye.